Welcome to Teach Outdoors, the podcast that brings you inspiration and ideas for taking your teaching outside. Together, we'll explore the benefits of learning outside the classroom, share tips and tricks for successful outdoor teaching, and hear from educators who are making a difference in the lives of their students through outdoor experiences. Join us as we dive into the world of teaching outdoors and discover new ways to engage and inspire the next generation. I'm Lauren McLean, mother of two young ones, author of Me and My Sit Spot, teacher, and outdoor classroom enthusiast. I'm grateful to be living, learning, playing, and raising my family on the traditional and unceded lands, waters, and skies of the Kwikwetlem First Peoples. Okay, welcome back to Teach Outdoors. I'm your host, Lauren McLean, and we have a great episode for you today. We've got Dr. Phil Hickman is with us to chat about the intersection between nature and technology. I'm so glad that we're connecting and we can hear your incredible, passionate stories about technology. Would you like to begin by telling us a little more about yourself and where you're coming from?
Yes, I'm currently in Michigan by way of Missouri. I have five graduate degrees and a doctorate, then finishing up my MBA. I did everything in the field of education. So I was a teacher, a school psychologist, a counselor, assistant principal, principal. I was a area superintendent, director of education. I've been a principal actually at all areas from elementary, middle to high school. I was a superintendent and some of the largest school districts in the nation. I had 300 schools, 210,000 students, area superintendent in Houston Independent School District. And then I was a superintendent in a small rural district in Mississippi. And then I was a national ambassador for United States Department of Education. And I did some consulting for Apple and Amazon, did some extensive years at Oracle, working with technology. I taught myself how to code. Opened up a few coding academies, nonprofit for youth, for urban youth. And then I developed my technology company, which is Playbook. And it's an innovative reading technology that uses artificial intelligence, natural language processing, and speech recognition to help children learn how to read. I think I left off that I also worked for United States Department of Education. Did I say that?
Perfect.
And so, yeah, just those kind of things. And I'm an author and public speaker as well.
Yeah, you are a jack of all trades if I have ever met one. It's definitely one of the cases of meeting someone who it's so clear that you love learning.
I do. I actually really do.
Now, most of my friends, my colleagues, and the listeners know that I have a bit of a fear. Well, maybe not a bit. I have quite a large fear of technology. I am that traditional person that I'm scared of pressing a button because I think I will break it somehow. And I just don't feel like I speak the same language as computers or iPads or phones. I'm trying very hard. But I'd love to start by talking about this fear in the school system and how important it is to model risk-taking. And I guess me trying to be more present in having that growth mindset.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things just as a foundation that we have to look out for is that in education, we spend a lot of time educating kids for our past instead of their future. And the world that they will live in, which is a digital ecosystem. And so, you know, a true global society, and we're talking about true digital natives. And as I talked to you before, like these children are born with iPads in their hands. Like they come out with an iPad, right? Like you can sit at restaurants and see 11-month-year-old flipping through the iPad and switching videos and knowing what icon to touch and those kind of things. And so with that, the research really talks about that their brains are wired differently, that they learn different than we do. And so I bring that up to that we as adults in our classroom, we have to overcome our fear for our students to prepare them for their future. One of the big research that's out there that talks about the new form of intelligence is the ability to learn, unlearn, and relearn, because technology has such a fast shelf life now. If you think about the iPhone comes out, a different version comes out every year. right? And so technology is a shelf life is a year, but it's going to be faster than that. And the research talks about when we're preparing kids for their future, that their job may change from day to day or week to week. They may not be doing the same thing because of the advance of technology, because how artificial intelligence is so rampant. One of the other interesting facts is that if you look at all the revolutions, industrial revolution, the mobile revolution, the dot-com, they last for years and years. But the AI, artificial intelligence, like for instance, ChatGPT, it came out last year in January. They're already on version 6. And so it has never happened at this rate of speed before ever. And so imagine, and then it's penetrating every market. Every market. And so, yeah, I tell this is one of the things I told my teachers, and I got a lot of flack for it. But I said, technology will not replace adults, but those who use it will replace those who don't.
I'm in trouble.
I
I
was saying, we just have to, we have to overcome our fears, and we have to think of it past. Everybody thinks it's putting a kid on a computer, putting a kid on a laptop, and then let them independently play games and those kind of things. The research is actually strongly against that. They do that at home in the classroom and the school settings. The a lot of times we spend more time with kids pointing, clicking, gaming when they need to be working on the four C's. They need to use technology to be creative. And to collaborate and also to communicate and creativity and those kind of things and critical thinking. That is how we utilize technology. We should utilize technology in the classroom instead of just sticking with independently, putting kids in a room. Let them be as creative as possible with it. And that's where I like to see more transition that is not just in the classroom, but outside the classroom.
So tell me more about that, because I know before we were talking about that our school grounds are so big, they're so wide, bigger than we, I think we realize. And so what are some of the steps that will help us be more comfortable taking technology outside?
It's almost like bringing learning to life. We grew up in 1D, 2D type learning, right? A paper and pencil, you write about a story, you write about your weekend experience, you look out the window and write about something. Where now we're looking more at 1D, 2D, 3D, and 4D learning. And so you establish 2D and 3D when you can take kids on virtual field trips. You can, students can interact with their technology, but again, that leaves out a couple of senses. So you want to take the learning to 4D. And what that looks like is you should, and just like you just explained, our school grounds are huge. We have a lot of great opportunity to learn in every subject matter, across subject matters. It's not just science where you look at an acorn. But there's ways that you can look at the circumference of an acorn or 90 degree angles or those kind of things or whatever that's out there. And so you utilize that technology, not only that you have the student go outside and feel and touch, but then they can take pictures, right? They can gather data. They can map out things, and then they can bring that 2D and 3D object or picture into the classroom, and then they can incorporate that into a lesson or write about it. Or be creative and and develop a book or whatever. But those kind of things are is what the layers of learning what they talk about when they say that we have to look at multiple modalities. The thing that people miss about learning modalities is that that is not the only way that you can learn. It's actually the best way that you learn with your modality. But the better way for someone to learn and retain information is to layer multiple modalities of learning. Yeah, and that's why you want to make sure that you're hitting the 4D senses. You're taking kids outside into the school grounds, and you're doing experiments, and you're engaging in learning, and they're touching and feeling, they're smelling things, and then they're integrating technology with that, with creating videos and pictures, and even more. I mean, collecting data and samples and measurements, and all those kind of things that you can utilize your technology for.
Right. And I think, as you had mentioned, that technology is no longer in a silo. We're able to use it in a more creative way so that we can do cross-curricular investigations and inquiries. And you're also suggesting, and it's so fantastic, that we can do the same outdoors. We're not just being outdoors to investigate science. We're seeing the math, we're seeing the socials, the history, the mapping, the language arts perspective. And when we add that extra layer or modality, as you were saying, of using technology outside, everything is being woven together so seamlessly. I mean, you make it so simple.
You actually summed it up in a better way.
Oh,
But
no,
you're
I
right.
just.
You're totally right. And we have to. If
Yeah.
we love our students, if we're really there to do what's best for our students, we're not just teaching to what's comfortable for us.
Yeah.
We, I used to always say that we never put the needs of adults over the needs of kids. And personally, I had to look in that lens. Right.
Right.
And yeah, this is making me uncomfortable. But guess what? This is the best way for all students to learn, and not just students who are like me or who fit my learning style or those kind of things.
Exactly. And I know when I take my class outside, really the only thing I'm bringing outside sometimes is just ourselves. Sometimes it's a nature journal. And sometimes it's one of those little foldable pocket guides so that if we see a bird or a tree, we can look up our local field guides to find it out. But it doesn't mean that on a nice sunny day, I can't bring out an iPad and have them draw. Well, look at me. I'm attempting to think I know how to use an iPad. They draw maybe on the iPad or collect data. Maybe there's an app that can help us collect data. I mean, do you have any suggestions? Because clearly I'm at base level.
One, there are millions of apps out there that
Okay.
allow you to integrate, photo, that allow you to integrate journaling or drawing, just like you said. But it's almost simple as in the old days, we would have that little square. And then we will have lines underneath, right? And we'll
Right.
say, hey, talk about your Christmas vacation or your weekend or whatever. And a student draws a picture in there with a crayon, and then they kind of write some words. But why not like add more layers of learning? Why not have a student go outside and take a picture of what it is that they want to write about, and then describe it? And as they're looking at that picture, they're being real descriptive. Are adding on to whatever it is that they took a picture of. Like those are just extra areas of learning.
Yeah.
Like I said, that layers that learning. Knowledge doesn't transfer unless it's simultaneously connected. So what that means is you have to have that aha moment. So you can, as a teacher, you can draw a circle, a 90-degree angle, whatever it is. You can do that all you want to. You can show a worksheet and say, this is the formula for it. You can do it. But imagine taking a student outside and they're looking at a slender block or something, and they take a picture of it, and then in that picture, they're drawing themselves on that iPad, and they're outlining the 90-degree angles on there. You can't take that away from them no more. So
No.
now when you give them a 90-degree angle, they can think of that block. And they can always apply that block to whatever it is that they're learning, whatever it is, examples that you show now. And you can never take that away from that student. That student has it. That student has that aha moment because you layered that level of instruction for that student.
Right, that's incredible. And then there's so many more options for them to express their learning and their thinking.
Right.
It reminds me of, it definitely wasn't my example. It was a colleague from a couple school districts over. She took her grade six class out on a nature walk with iPads. Whatever app they were using, they would take a photo and the students would voice record a story or a moment in that spot, and then they did a few of those. So it was mapping their story walk. And so
Right.
for the learners that can't necessarily write full sentences or get tired and lose interest, this, she said, really kept their attention. And then every student had their own little nature walk storybook from the
Right.
day.
No, that's great. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Or even if you did a scavenger hunt, let's just Let's just say you really, I keep going to the 9 degree angle, square or whatever it is that, for a younger age. But let's just say you did an H walk. Let's find 9 degree angles. Imagine how many students are going, ooh, wait, ooh, I had one. And they're taking pictures like they have it. And they have, that's when they have it, And so then, like I said, then that knowledge transfers. So any assessment you give, they can put that knowledge and say, you know what, this doesn't look like that block or that bale of hay or that broken stick that was in an L shape. This doesn't look like, that's not 90 degrees, right? And so that's what you want. The other research is strong about forgetting, or when people have test anxiety, those kind of things. It's like you actually never forget anything. You just filed it incorrectly, and the only way you file things is off prior knowledge. So if you're not out there exploring and building their prior knowledge, then they can't file. That information is just floating, so they can't retrieve it. A file system, you're able to retrieve easily, alphabetical order, whatever it is. File systems is for retrieval, actually. And so that's what the research is saying. So you have to have 4D, where a student can remember a smell, a student can remember a sight, I mean, what they see, what they touch, and all those kind of things. And so it's not just that it's a picture. They have touched that stick or log or brick or square or animal or whatever it is, or they smelled it. They remember the environment, when they were doing a nature walk and all those kind of things. And so that's what it's about.
And I think that just leads to so much deeper learning, as you're saying, because they are making all of those connections. And we're
Yes.
not, again, we're not doing all of this in silos. The learning that we're doing in class, angles, fractions, we're doing that same learning outdoors, and we're doing the same learning through technology. So we've got these three elements where everything is being crisscrossed and woven together, which probably lends itself to a better filing system, as you said.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's incredible. Before our time runs out, is there any other stories or anecdotes you'd like to tell us about your experiences with technology and outdoors?
Yeah, I one of the things that I developed with my technology is, I had to try to figure out what is going on with reading, especially in the United States. The research says 74 per 75% of fourth graders in the entire United States read below grade level, and the other research says that 95% of children, if given the correct instructions, should be reading on grade level. So, I liken to say that outside of the weather system, at times, to me, education is one of the few fields that's allowed to function at a failure rate. That means we're only successful 25% of our children, of our product, and that's not good. And so one of the things that I looked at is how do we assess reading and how do we interact with reading? And the most of the technology that's out there, it are paper and pencil. What we do is we quietly have a child read a paragraph and then answer multiple choice questions. Well, that's reading comprehension. That has nothing to do with basic reading. And the issue is that our children are using so much energy trying to decode and break down what they're reading that they don't have any more brain capacity, any more energy to comprehend or understand what they read. And so the true way of assessing it is you have to hear a child read to understand if it's a phonics or phonemic awareness issue, is it a fluency issue, decoding, blending, those kind of things. And so my technology is one of the first technologies that actually can hear the child read. And as they read, it actually can hear the child read all the way down to the phonemic level. So if a child read the word bat, at, or the lack thereof, and then we can make an analysis and then use artificial intelligence to do recommendations for teachers. And then we also personalize the learning for students. And so one of the neat nature facts that I would like to say is most people believe that a child is born. They start to babble and coo and talk, then they walk, then they read, like it's a genetic process. And reading is actually like rocket science. You actually have to rewire the brain. We're not genetically wired to learn how to read. That's actually a new evolution. It's a new skill in our evolution, in a sense, or our timeline of being humans on this earth. And so it takes a lot of direct instruction. And real, phonics-based instructions, systematic instruction in order for a child to learn to read. But
Yeah.
most people think it's a genetic process, that's an automatic process that you start to expose kids to books and pictures and they memorize and those kind of things. So that's the fun fact, and that's one of the reasons why I was passionate about developing my technology, because the other thing is that it showed that 85% of teachers said that they learn how to teach reading in the field from other teachers.
Yes. Yeah,
And
I can see that.
76% of that was incorrect.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
So I want to develop technology that helps recommend the teachers exactly how to diagnose and prescribe what's wrong with those youngsters.
Yeah.
And because their foundation kind of looks like a Swiss cheese, they have holes in their foundation. And
Right.
it's only, the only thing you have to do is find out what are those holes, plug those holes, and then that baby is able to move on and be a fluent reader.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I will definitely include this in the podcast notes, but for anybody who would like to learn a bit more about the playbook, your website is www.playbookeducation.com, and that's PLA book.
Yes, and PLA because everybody says, "Did you're talking about reading and you misspelled a word?" It's actually multisyllabic, so the vowel can scream its name, and so it's just showing the complications of the English language. But that's why it's PLABOOK playbook.
Wonderful. Great description. I love that. And thank you for your novelty nature note. I'm just going to quickly share about how our grade 2-3 class has been observing two different winter berries. So the snowberry and then the rosehip. The snowberry being a white little berry. It's a very common ornamental plant around here, but it's not a berry that we eat as humans. It's a the birds do enjoy eating it during the winter time. And then we've got the rosehip, which is a bit more orangey, pinky reddish in color, and it's something that we have been harvesting and making delicious teas with. It's full of vitamin C, so really good for you. Unlike the snowberry, which almost has no nutritional value and can actually be toxic to humans, so please do
Wow.
not forage that.
Wow.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. Honestly, Dr. Phil, this was such an amazing conversation. I appreciate you taking time to share your stories with us. This was such a lovely conversation.
Well, thank you. Your facilitation of this conversation was great. We could have went for hours.
We could have. Yes, it's hard to stay short. All right. Well, everyone, remember to check out the teachoutdoors.ca website to learn more about the new professional development format for staff meetings and lunch and learn sessions called Nature's Path, A Year of Monthly Sparks. That's it for today. Keep exploring, stay curious, and tune in for more adventures. And as always, I'll end with the song From the Trees by Brandon Grant.
I start on my path, I look around to find a spot that I can call home for a while. Walking slowly, I feel so calm. I find a spot where nature opens up her arms for me to breathe. I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze, knowing the land around me brings me peace, watching the world around me sets me free. I feel the sunshine kiss my skin, I hear all of the birds singing from within. I get familiar with my space. I now know how every part fits in every place for me to breathe. I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze, knowing land around me brings me peace. Watching the world around me sets me. I go to visit in morning, in sunshine and the rain, to see what's different and notice the things that stay the same. I get to know my teacher, the spot that gives me health. To get to know the land is to get to know yourself. To breathe, I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze. Knowing the land around me brings me peace. Watching the world around me sets me free.